Welcome to Cardboard Conjecture. We're a podcast about board games where we have opinions and conclusions formed on the basis of incomplete information. This episode of Cardboard Conjecture is brought to you by these great Saskatoon businesses: Amazing Stories Comics on 8th Street, Dragon's Den Games on 8th Street, and Breakout Escape Rooms on Faithful Avenue. Well, hello there. I'm your host, Norm, and this is Whatcha Been Playing Wednesday, a special weekly episode where a bunch of us content creators come together and let you know what we've been playing, you know, recently. And on this episode are definitely a board game podcast, the tabletop bellhop, Meeple and the Moose, Omni Gamers Club, the Meeple Dungeon, and Cardboard Conjecture. And it was mentioned once, it was mentioned twice, it's probably going to get mentioned, well, I'll mention it again. Check out the show notes for the links to the cast. Enjoy the show.
Hello, I'm Aaron Millick.
Oh, right. I'm Bruce Calvert.
We are definitely a board game podcast. A podcast definitely about board games, except when they're not. And we're back on What You Been Playing Wednesday.
So, Aaron, what you been playing?
I'm glad you asked. I'm super excited. After checking in Walmart stores for a very long time now and Chapters in Indigo, I've been looking for a game that I had as a teenager that I was always hoping they would redo, and they finally have. It's from the Uno people.
Oh, okay. Newer than Sticks and Stones.
Yes.
I'm just saying, you were a teenager a long time.
That's none of your business. Anyway, Mattel Games in 2021. What?
Poop and stick.
Mattel Games in 2021.
All right.
Finally released Oh No 99. After a million remixes of Uno and Dos and Skippo and all the other games, which I don't like from them, Ono 99 is nothing like Crazy Eights. It's nothing like Uno. The goal of the game is to avoid hitting 99. You basically just play number cards. It's a math game. And as you approach 99, you want to play your action cards to avoid actually hitting 99. So it's a bit of a push your luck, and you're kind of on the edge of your seat all the time to make sure you're not the guy that's going to hit 99. It's a lot of fun, and in my opinion, the best game that's ever come out of the Uno family. But for some reason, since the mid-90s, they've never reboxed it, never redid it, and they finally have. The only difference between this version and the original had little chips to keep track of how many times you've hit 99, mm-hmm. and as you lose chips, you eventually get eliminated from the game. And also, it was originally one deck of like 52 cards or whatever. Now it's two decks, so it's a much bigger deck, and they've gotten rid of the four chip or the chips that came with it. It used to be more of a 2-4 player game. Now it's 2-6, which is another difference. So super excited that they have finally released a childhood favorite. I bought it, love it, and I'm looking forward to playing it with people.
I'm a little torn here.
All right.
On one hand, I want to make fun of you because it's a Uno family game.
Yeah.
Why are you picking this? So you but should. I've actually played Oh No 99 with you, and I actually really like this game. So I can't make fun of you, and now I don't know what to do.
Well, don't worry. Right. You did. You made fun of my age.
Oh, good point. Okay, good. All right. Yes, go get Uno 99. It actually is an excellent game in the Uno family.
Yeah. $8 at Walmart. Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
What you been playing, Royce?
Since you talked about a inexpensive, tiny card game, I will too.
Okay.
Mine is also a little bit of a nostalgic childhood favorite kind of thing.
All right.
Challenge of the Super Friends.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Challenge of the Super Friends. So there was the Super Friends TV show in the 70s, and Challenge of the Super Friends only went for one season, but it was basically the same characters again. I really have a warm spot in my heart for this show. I'll be honest, it's not a good show. It really, really isn't. But it hits me in that sort of nostalgic part. So I got it. I got Challenge of the Super Friends, the card game. It's published by Cryptozoic, which have done good games in the past. It's designed by Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback, Fleeples, Fleep, Three Sisters, Fleep the Dice Game, Stellar, a bunch of other games. Yeah. They have an excellent pedigree. But I still went into this with very, very low expectations. It's a blind bidding game. Everybody has a deck of cards. You pick a card out of your hand. You play it blind. You flip it over. Almost every card has a special power of some kind. Whoever plays the highest number gets first choice of the objectives. Most of the objectives are positive points. Some of them are negative points. Some of them have special. Some of the objectives have special abilities. So it's all about these interconnected special abilities. And then there's the challenge deck. And really, this is the one that, to be honest, makes the game. Occasionally, you're going to have to face a challenge. There's a small deck of challenge cards, maybe 15 of them. One of them is no effect. The rest of them will do various different things, from losing points to losing cards. There's even one where you have to close your eyes while the next round is set up, and then the cards are played face down. So everybody else knows what the objectives are, but you're kind of picking blind from the objectives. So even if you win, you don't know what you're going to be getting, and you don't know how much you should be bidding for it.
Hmm.
It's so much better than it has any right to be. It's actually a lot of fun. We really, really had a good time playing this one. We laughed. It was a lot of fun. It's really, really fast. I mean, you play three rounds, and I think it took like, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes at most.
Right.
It's a much better game than I expected, and I really liked it. Maybe I should have had more faith in the designers, more faith in the company, but come on, look at it. It looks awful, but it's actually great, and I hope it does well, because Challenge of the Super Friends, a much better game than I expected it to be.
So two,
I really enjoyed it.
Two questions. Where can I get one? Because I'm thinking this as this for a gift for somebody.
You can get them at any of the local stores. It's about $12.
Yeah. Like Meeple Mart, we should have it?
Yep. Yeah, cool. Should.
Okay. And is Super Friends the one where there was a brother and sister who, if they put
Wonder Twins,
that's where that's
Wonder
from.
Twin powers activate form of moose, form of water.
I remember. Because
it was always the awful thing. One Wonder Twin could turn into any animal, and it was like the great power. The other Wonder Twin could turn into a form of water, so ice or water or snow or steam. And later on, they would cheat it a little bit. And they're like, ice giant. Yeah, form of ice giant. That's an ice thing. Yeah, no. It was just a weird, why did you get the worst power by so much? And they had Gleek, their little monkey friend. Awesome. Yeah.
See, now, I do remember that very well. I guess I was a big fan as a kid, but I had no idea what it was called or it was from, and I'd forgotten. So now I know. That's awesome. Cool. So we both have little card games we like, and they're both better than they ought to be.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Perfect. If you want to hear us talk about more about card games and board games and everything else, you got to come over and check out Definitely Board Game Podcast. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere podcasts live. If you want to reach out to us, definitelyboard@gmail.com, @boarddefinitely on Twitter, and @definitelyboard on Facebook. Royce, anything else you want to say before we go?
Wonder Twin powers activate.
Say goodbye, Royce.
Goodbye, Royce.
Hello, and welcome to the Tabletop Bellhop segment of What You've Been Playing Wednesday. I am Mo Tuzano, the Tabletop Bellhop, your cardboard concierge, helping you make your game nights better. Now, we've had a few rough weeks around here, but I'm happy to say that we hosted our first game night in over a month this past Friday. It was also our first game night with Sean here in Windsor, living local, and having him here to actually play the games we'll be talking about on the show in the future is going to be fantastic for our podcast, and I'm really looking forward to that. Being able to have Sean actually talk about the games in other than just being an outside observer, hearing about the games and seeing the pictures I share and stuff. So that's fantastic. So this past Friday, it wasn't a long session. We only got in two games, but it was great to see other people again, hang out, socialize, enjoy some Windsor-style pizza as well. The best pizza in the world. Now, the first game we played was the new Disney edition of Smash Up, which is a collaboration between the OP and AEG. And thank you, OP, for sending us a copy of this game to check out. Now, the big thing everyone needs to know about this game is this is 100% Smash Up. No holds barred, tons of text, lots to remember, keywords everywhere, a huge number of card combinations, and a learning curve with every single deck. Now, being a Disney game, and a game that's going to be sold at mass market stores through the OP, I was actually expecting more of a Smash Up Lite, I guess, with Disney themes. That's not what this is. This is a set of 8 new decks, just as complicated as the past ones for Smash Up, that are fully compatible with the existing deck that just happened to have a Disney theme. Now, if you dig Smash Up already, you're going to love this. You got 8 more decks to combine with everything else you already own. But if you are new to the game, this could be a great place to start, especially if you dig the Disney theme. Now, one thing I do appreciate about this new edition, because this is a standalone new starter set, is they included base cards, like, like boards. They're not boards, they're cards, but to put the base cards on, like mats to put the base cards on, with a couple tracking tokens. So this is a better way to show when what the power level is at that base and when it's about to pop. They also have new two-sided tokens for numbers, which is nice because now you can better tell the difference between a boost and a victory point and a penalty on a card. So that's another nice addition. So overall, so far, I'm enjoying this version of Smash Up. It just wasn't what I thought. I thought we were going to get a light, easy introduction to Smash Up, and that's not what this is. But you know what? If you dig Smash Up, or you dig Disney and Smash Up, this is a no-brainer. Now, the other game we played has already become one of our new favorites. We are loving this game, and that's the anime deck-building game Cowboy Bebop Space Serenade from Japanime Games, who we do have to thank for hooking us up with a review copy. This is a variable market deck builder with a Star Realms-like card combo system combined with some board game elements of moving around between the Bebop and three planets in order to capture, dead or alive, your bounties. Now, some highlights in this game include lots of ways to get starting cards out of your decks, a resource that actually carries over between turns that you can build up, asymmetric player abilities, all 4 players play differently, and while that Star Realms-like combo system where certain cards are better if played alongside other cards from other characters. Now, the best part of this game, though, is that it is fully competitive, but still has that reluctant co-op feel that matches the show. A big part of this is the ability to use another character's special ability while you are on the same location as them, whether they want you to or not. And this really gives that Cowboy Bebop feel. Now, another thing I really have to note about this game that really is striking to me and shocked me when I realized it is how gorgeous this game is. You have a fully functional box insert, a plastic box insert with a space for everything, double-layered player boards, minis that replace the standees, and more. This is in the retail version. And when I got this, I say retail version, but that's wrong. It's the only version. I actually assumed when I opened this up, it was like the Kickstarter version. Well, there was no Kickstarter. Maybe in the middle of the pandemic, they went, you know what, forget it. We're not going to kickstart it. We're just going to give everyone everything, and that's going to be the only version out there. And I got to say, that is a win for gamers everywhere. If you dig Cowboy Bebop, you're going to love this. It really feels like Bebop, especially that competitive but cooperative, everyone trying to outdo each other, but they do have to work together sometimes feel is great. But more important, if you have no idea who these space cowboys are, this is one of the best deck-building games to come out. It's up there with Dune Imperium, Lost Ruins of Arnak, and Clank, in my opinion, and well worth checking out. Well, that's it for the games I've been playing. It was great to finally get some gaming in and to take some time to talk about those games. Thanks for listening. For the Tabletop Bellhop Gaming Podcast, I am Mo Tuzano. Good day, and game on.
Hello, my name is Alex, and I write board game reviews over at meatballandmoose.com, and I'm here to talk to you about the games I played this week for What You've Been Playing Wednesday. Actually, today, I'm going to continue recapping a couple of the games that we played during our Cabin Con 2022. Last week, I talked about Pandemic the Cure and Beyond the Sun, and today, the first game I want to talk about is Gaia Project. Gaia Project, designed by Jens Drogenmuller and Helgi Ostertag, is the spiritual successor to Terra Mystica. In Gaia Project, players control an asymmetric faction and must terraform neighboring planets into their home environment before developing colonies and improving their infrastructure. This is a big game with a lot going on. Players are tasked with balancing several resources as they expand into the far reaches of space. I can see why Gaia Project and its fantasy partner Terra Mystica are so beloved. The decisions offered here are wide and varied. With 14 different factions all playing incredibly differently, there is depth to be plumbed. This is a tough game that rewards appropriate planning and capitalizing on being just even a single turn ahead of your opponents. There's no randomness to throw you off your game, and everything is deterministic, which I generally enjoy, actually. I still think it's a bit too much for me. After we finished our 5-hour game, I had a splitting headache, but there's no way that I can say that Gaia Project is objectively bad. For my money, I'd say Gaia Project is better than Terra Mystica, even if only because it jettisons the need for priests. One less resource to juggle means one less bottleneck to force yourself through. After that grueling 5-hour game of Gaia Project, we chose to play Seven Wonders as a light wind down. We also included the Armada expansion into this play. Now, Seven Wonders Armada adds a whole extra board to the right of your normal player board. When you build a non-resource car, you can spend additional resources to progress a ship of the same color up its track. These tracks will offer some naval combat power, inflict taxes upon everyone at the table, a flurry of victory points, or the opportunity to settle an island, which can offer some unique enhancements to your civilization. This expansion also adds a few more cards into each of the ages, meaning that every age will be 7 cards instead of 6 cards. These extra cards will offer you more ways to interact with the players who are not your direct neighbor, like granting you the ability to buy a resource from someone 2 seats away, or giving you the ability to choose someone at the table to have combat with, meaning at the end of the round you'll evaluate 3 combats instead of the usual 2. At the end of each age, in addition to the usual combat with your neighbors, there is now a naval combat phase, which all players participate in. Whoever has the strongest naval military of all the players earns points, while the weakest loses points. And there's a small amount of points for coming in second and third. Now, these may seem like small changes, but they actually address a lot of the problems I have with Seven Wonders. I like being able to interact with more players at the table. I like using leftover resources. And I like the little boosts that island cards offer. Even if in this game I ignored them to my own demise. I've seen Seven Wonders Armada go on sale for as low as $8. At that price, I cannot recommend this expansion enough. Finally, the last game I want to talk about today is Scythe with the Wind Gambit expansion. For those who haven't played before, Scythe by Jamie Stegmeier and published by Stonemaier Games is an action selection game where the threat of combat is often more powerful than the actual combat. Set in an alternate history version of 1920 Europa, workers farm the land with scythes while heavily armored mechs loom on the horizon. Each player takes control of an asymmetric faction that offers various abilities and powers when the mechs have been built, and each player's action selection board is different from another. On your turn, you'll have to place your pawn on one of the 4 actions on your action selection board. You'll take the top action, which can be move, bolster, trade, or produce. And if you have the necessary resources, you can choose to take the bottom action as well, which can be deploy, upgrade, build, or enlist. Players keep taking turns building up their forces until one player manages to play their 6th achievement star. The end game scores are tallied, and the player with the highest score is the winner. Now, the base game of Scythe is high on my top games of all time list, and is probably my favorite game that includes direct attacking. I generally enjoy the arc of the gameplay, where everything starts slow, your factions move at a glacial pace, and everyone's locked into their own little island, cut off from the world by a river. Only by building the mech that grants you Riverwalk can you adventure forth and spread your influence. The Wind Gambit module adds in impressive airships with 2 abilities that can be swapped in and out each time you play the game, as well as alternate ending conditions. Following the advice of the rulebook, all the airships had the same power, where in this case, units moving out of the airship space get +1 movement, and players don't lose popularity when forcing workers to retreat from a hex that has an airship tile on it. I think this combination of cards would have been a lot more interesting had we gotten to the end of the game where stealing resources was possible. The new end game card said, when the first player takes a star in a category that has no stars, they earn $5. The game ends when someone either places a 6 star or has $40. Otter just so happened to have a great combo where he could do his top and bottom sides of 2 actions back to back, bolster, build mechs, produce, upgrade, and then repeat. And this got him 4 stars very quickly, but it left his popularity in the toilet. The 4 stars and the coins he earned from the bottom row actions left him within striking distance of ending the game. Just a few turns later, he had earned his 40th dollar and ended the game just after the first combat, and each other player only had 1 star on the board. I think if the game had continued on, his engine would have sputtered out. Sure, he had a commanding lead, but I do think it would have made for an interesting endgame. Going forward, I wouldn't play with the alternate ending conditions, and I didn't really feel like the airships added too much other than a general aesthetic. Unfortunately, because this game ended abruptly and so early, it felt anticlimactic, and it didn't have the opportunity for anyone other than Otter to make any interesting plays. In the future, I suspect we'll at the very least be leaving out the alternate game condition, game end conditions, if not the entire Wind Gambit module. And that's all I have to talk about this week. If you'd like to read more of my board game reviews, along with seeing some gameplay photos, you can find them over at meatballinthemoose.com. Have a happy Wednesday.
G'day, this is Daniel Winter from Board Game Feast and the Omni Gamers Club podcast. I've been away on holiday for a while, been easing myself back in to some board games. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of trying a new game called Twilight Inscription. That is the new roll-and-write version of Twilight Imperium. So this is designed by James Niffen and published by Fantasy Flight Games. So if you're familiar with Twilight Imperium, you'll know that that game does nothing by half measures. It's a space 4X game that will regularly run for 10 to 12 hours. And so Twilight Inscription tries to recapture some of that scope in the roll-and-write genre. Each player will have 4 mats that they are drawing on, each one loosely associated with each of the 4 X's, that is explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate. And each round you'll be drawing a card and rolling some dice that dictate what symbols you can cross off, with each player choosing one of those 4 boards to activate. Now, there are plenty of great opportunities for comboing, with crossing off spaces on one board, unlocking resources or abilities on another board, really giving your space empire a great interconnected feeling. You also have more interaction than most roll-and-writes with the military board. Once each round at a random point, there will be an event that triggers a military combat with the neighbors on either side of you, and you will get a little bonus or penalty based depending on whether you'll win or lose there. There are a huge number of player ability, that is factions, each give you a little boost or ongoing ability throughout the game that have some great flavor, and you'll recognize a lot of favorites from the original Twilight Imperium. And the markers that come with the game are actually wet chalk. They are messy, but they do have this vibrant orange contrast against the black, spacey backdrops. Now, all that said, I really struggled to find the justification for a game being this long and unwieldy, considering the benefits of the roll-and-write genre generally being sort of short, simultaneous play that keep games flowing quickly, and the disposable nature generally behooving a game that doesn't require a lot of tracking information. You're constantly circling resources here, some that are spent right away, some that can be saved to spend at a later point, but trying to scan your board to see what you have available at any given time is just this mess of circles and cross. So it's really not much in the way of readability, I found. And that isn't helped by most of the iconography and symbols being pretty arbitrary and not having any sort of association with the sorts of actions you're taking. And sometimes they're color-coded, sometimes they're not. And that inconsistency really threw me in clean reading of the board. Then you have the turn structure, which is staggered in a way that gives multiple opportunities each round to have to wait for everyone else to catch up and complete their combos before you can continue. So it was just way too much downtime, I found, for this sort of game. Now, each of the boards by themselves did have some clever little puzzles in how you navigate around them and chain abilities. But overall, I really felt that it was less than some of its parts in how it was all cobbled together in what we found to be a pretty unwieldy way. Now, obviously, there are means you can go about trying to fix this by tracking all the resources yourself on a separate sheet, for example. But at that point, I feel like it may as well not really be a roll-and-write game. If you're a super fan of Twilight Imperium, you will likely find enough flavor here to intrigue you, but otherwise I can't personally recommend this one, unfortunately. So I've been Daniel Winter from the Omnigamers Club podcast. Check us out on your podcatcher of choice. We just released an episode on the video game Vampire Survivors, and stay tuned for our next episode on Spirit Islands. Thanks, bye.
Hello, everybody. It's Rob and Anna Marie from the Meeple Dungeon.
Hello.
And we are back again recording for the What You've Been Playing Wednesdays podcast. And this week we have a couple games to talk about. What's the first one we're going to talk about, Anna Marie?
The first one we're going to talk about is Monkey, designed by Anthony Nguyen, Jean Pinault, art by Camille Chaussy, and published by The Flying Games.
Yeah, Monkey. So you played this a lot with our two boys. Mm-hmm. I haven't played it that much. Do you want to kind of explain what's going on here?
Yeah, so essentially what you're doing in this game, the time for succession has come, and you're an orangutan, and you're trying to, it's a two-player game, and you're trying to just basically become the king of the jungle, right. To take over, become, yeah, the king. And so the way to become the king is to gather the most amount of fruit. Whoever gathers the most fruit becomes the king. So the board is made up of 4 3x3 tiles.
Yep.
And you kind of place them all together. And then on the corner, each corner of the square board, then you're going to have kind of a circle that's cut into like with a quarter cut out of it. And it's like a right angle. You fit it on the edge of the board.
Yeah.
So it's just like a circle fit on the edge of there. And those circles, they're statues. They're just orangutan statues. Mm-hmm. And they hold excess fruit.
Right.
So on the board, on the tiles, you've got little spots where you need to put barrels. You've got green barrels and blue barrels, and you put them face down in stacks of three on all these barrel spots. And then
you also have your player board.
Yep, you have your player board, which is it has two rows on it. The top row has blue fruit and green fruit.
Yeah, four spots for four different blue fruit and four different green fruit.
Yeah, each color will have a banana, an onion, a pineapple. Well, I think it's an onion. Maybe it's not. A pineapple and a grape. It's not really a fruit. But and then the bottom row has four fruits, one of each piece, but it's got
they're golden version. Yeah.
Yes. So to win the game, the first player who completes a row wins. So you can either complete the bottom golden row with only four pieces of fruit, or the top row that's going to have eight, four of each color,
mm-hmm,
of the blue or green. So the way you get the fruit is you each randomly for the first turn place your orangutans on the board just on an empty tile.
Yep.
In this game, you can move diagonally or orthogonally.
Yep.
As long as you're not impeded. So you can't move through barrels, you can't move through orangutans.
Right, you can't stop. Move through each other.
Yeah. And you go to a spot and you start to flip over the barrels of fruit to see which fruit come up. You can flip anything that is in your row or your column. So it doesn't have to
be... Right, you don't have to be adjacent to it.
You don't have to be adjacent to it. You can't be diagonal. You can't flip something diagonally from you. But it just has to be in your row or your column. And so I flip over a banana on a green background, so like a green banana. I can stop there, take the banana onto my board, or I can keep going. Mm-hmm. I can flip over another barrel if I'm able to. Let's say it's a blue pineapple. I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to stop there. I'm going to take those and put them on my board.
Yeah, it's the little bit of the pressure,
push pressure luck. Yeah.
Mechanic there.
Yeah, definitely. Which I tend to not be good at in this game. But yeah, so you can keep going. If you ever get two of the same fruit, regardless of what color, like if you get a blue and a green banana, it's still the same fruit,
Yep. You
bust. And what you do then is you take the fruit, and depending on which tile you pulled it from, like which barrel you flipped, it's going to go on that tile's statue.
Yep.
And so the statues are going to start gathering fruit on them. But after you bust, it's the next player's turn and they go do their thing too. Move
either adjacently or orthogonally and get themselves into a place where they have many options to pull from.
Yeah.
Different colored barrels and start flipping over the lids of barrels and see what you get.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're as you're flipping, if you come across one of the four color gold colored pieces of fruit, that immediately goes onto the statues. They don't stay on the board. You can't gather them. You have to put them on the statue.
Right.
So, I forgot to mention at the start of the game, each player also has four rubies of fruit.
Yes.
And
they're like little tablets.
Yeah.
With a ruby embedded in it.
Yeah. So that's how you're going to get the golden fruit. So in the tile, let's say instead of flipping over barrels of fruit, I want to get that golden pineapple that's on that statue. So if I'm on the tile attached to the statue, I take my my pineapple ruby, I flip it over so I know it's used, and then I grab the golden pineapple.
And you put it into that bottom
in the golden spot.
Row. Yeah.
If there were any other pineapples on that board, like maybe there was a green pineapple, I could take that one as well, because you take all the fruit of that one type that you flipped over.
Right.
So then I would take that. And then you're going to go back and forth doing that. And whoever fills up your row first wins.
Yeah, you either get all four blue and all four green fruit and complete that row, or you get just the four golden versions of them and you would win that way.
Yeah, and I like this game for its simplicity. Like they say on the box, 7+. I agree with that. I think that's great. Because you don't lose anything when you bust. It's just the next player's turn. Mm-hmm. The fruit goes to the side and then, you know, you decide what you want to do next time.
Yeah, it's a simple, fun family game.
It's a quick game.
Extremely light.
10 minutes-ish. Yeah.
Yep.
And so you can play quite a few of these games.
And really great components. These two chimpanzee minis that it comes with are really cool. They're painted and they're nice and big and chunky. Like, they're really nice. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good game. I like it. Great one. The kids love it. Great family game.
Nice light game.
Yeah, and we're going to mention one other game we played this week, and that is Weather Machine from the newest
Far Vital From Light
Lacerda from Eagle Griffin Games. And yes, that is the opposite end of the spectrum from Monkey. But if you want to hear all about that game, we did just review it on our latest episode, episode 49 of the Meeple Dungeon podcast. Yeah. You can hear all about it over there. On any of your major podcasting sites, you'll find the Meeple Dungeon podcast. Okay, so we're going to run and we will see you next week. Cheers.
See ya.
Hey there, everybody. Norm here from the Cardboard Conjecture podcast, and I would like to talk about two games this week. And the first one is a game that I can't even talk about it right now. Is one that I haven't played in a long time. And then one of those rediscovers when you're looking through your collection going, I just want to put a game down that's interesting, blah, blah, blah. That whole, you know, you're thinking as you're looking through your collection. And it popped out. And I remember having such a good time and a challenging time playing Atlantis Rising 2nd Edition. Which came out in 2019, designed by Galen Cecil, art, again, here's my favorite, one of my favorite artists, Vincent Dutre, and published by Elf Creek Games. And Atlantis Rising is, well, yeah, I think you've kind of got an idea here, is the fantastical mythology of Atlantis and the sinking island. And in this case, the board be sinking, very much like Forbidden Island, where parts of the board start sinking, right? In this case, Atlantis is a star-shaped island, like you've got a center, strong center core island with arms. I believe it's six arms that come out representing three sources of resources in regards to the mountains, the hills, and the forests for ore, gold, and I think crystal. And then you have three other peninsulas that jut out from this core island representing taking the ore and turning it into Atlantium, which is a prized resource. And you have a peninsula representing basically the cards, because the cards are your civilization and your ingenuity and your all of these kind of extra bonus things that you can do through the card activity, which is really cool because that makes or breaks your game sometimes. And then the last one is, because this is a worker placement game, you have to have a potential to get more workers. And this peninsula represents that in regards to growing your civilization. Now, as a good, and it's a co-op game or a solo, and as I say, every co-op game is a solo game. But this is a cooperative game that plays up to something like, let's see here, 7 players. And what you essentially do is that cooperative structure where you prepare, then you let the events go, then you take your actions, then you kind of like gather your wounded and get ready again for another assault, right? And that's the same situation where you have your Atlanteans, you have a leader, which is really cool. The variability on the asymmetry, I guess, is the common word, but the uniqueness of each leader and what that attributes to how you approach the game, because some leaders will grant somebody on a worker placement space, and I'll quickly explain that, the ability to have an extra point on a dice roll for resources, or that they will suffer the consequences of a flooding and remove themselves from play without taking actions in order to have those on that peninsula continue to have their actions. Very cool stuff. So as I said, there's a peninsula. Each peninsula is broken up into probably 7 or 8 different kind of incremental segments that you will, if you go right to the end, you have a great chance of being very successful on, let's say you're looking for resources or you're trying to gather cards. That will be the highest reward, but it's also the highest risk. Because once you set your Atlanteans on all of these positions, and each peninsula is that same risk-taking gamble, I guess, is that if you go right to water's edge and an event card's pulled and that's flooded, your Atlanteans, you don't lose them, they just go back to your board, but you'll lose that ability to pull off that action. So you have to, and depending on, like when I play solo, you pull 4 event cards. When you're playing as a cooperative, each person at the table takes their turn to flip an event card. There are cards called Calm Waters, where nothing happens, but there are also cards called Control Floods, where you have to flood 2, not just 1, okay, 2. There are also cards that will, you know, devastate, the plague, boom, everybody loses something, right? I'm gushing about it because it's such a good game. If you have the opportunity to play the game, or if this sounds interesting to you and you have the opportunity to purchase it, it's one of those games that everybody talks about and it's always hard to find, but it's out there, right? It's not out of print. It's still out there, but it's hard to find. That's Atlantis Rising. Now, I would like to quickly talk about another game which is probably starting to become, I've got a whole shelf space of this designer's games. It's a Stefan Feld game. And this one is Trajan. Now, give me one quick sec. I love the tagline here. Manage and rule all aspects of ancient Rome with a clever action selection mancala. There are, if you like Euros, if you like Stefan Feld, it's probably in your collection. This is rated very high on BGG, but without going into a very in-depth kind of concept, the game itself, the board, is kind of this crazy, cool-looking perspective view of the map of Italy from kind of space, but you're looking at it from this kind of fisheye lens thing all the way towards to the north of the board towards Europe. Now, let's start at the north board. There are six or seven micro games or mini games in this entire, you know, rule all aspects of ancient Rome. The top one is military. And it's that whole military conquest. And there's a map with some bonus chits that you could pick up where there's a area control for points. When you get your legionnaires there, that's a whole cool game. As you make your way down, there is another game in regards to the resource shipping and exports that happen in Rome. So there's a card game where you either gather commodity cards, and three boats are out there representing cashing in your hand. And of course, it's like if you have one, it's a small cash in. But if you hold out and try to get, you know, a lot of that set represented on the rules of the boat, right, all matching or all doubles or that whole thing, then you could cash for some good points. If someone gets there first and they cash at, you know, a value, max value of a certain boat or whatever value of the boat flips over, you could still take that action, but at a reduced rate because someone got the cream of the crop on the exports on that round, on that boat. Then you can move down. There's the construction part of Rome where it's point salad. I mean, let's get to the point here. All of these little smaller games are where you can churn out points. Here's the crux of it, though. You can't do everything. You can't push the gas pedal on every one of these little games. You have to find, I think the key to this game is, and I'll get to that Moncala because that's where it sits in. The key to this game is to allow yourself not to have FOMO on the board where all these other players are getting big points out of this area and you're like, I'm not even paying attention to that. Focus on what you're focusing on because this whole game starts from the Moncala. On your player board, there's a lot of stuff, but the main thing to focus on here that we're going to talk about is the action selection Moncala because representing all of those little micro games, right, are icons on this dishes on this Moncala for going to do military, for going to do Senate actions, to go to do construction actions, to forum, right? The whole thing. But you have, let's call them these different colored pitons or markers, wooden markers, that like a Moncala, you pick them all up and drop them one at a time in these bowls as you're going clockwise around. Where you land, a la Five Tribes, is where the activity happens. So if you land on a military Moncala or dish, you get to take that action. There's another cool thing is that if you have loaded up that Moncala with a Trajan tile that represents if you have a certain matching two colors of these pips in that dish, then you get to trigger some points and another. This is the key. All of these little bonus actions add up because you only have a certain, I think it's about 16 turns, and to do the best that you can in victory points, because it's a Euro. It's victory points, of course. It's the most, for me at least, mind-crunching, efficiency engine, puzzle solving, and then still trying to interact with that board to see, okay, this is the action I'm doing. What can I do in that little mini game going on? I am never bored with this game. This game is happily, this was a back-to-back Gamer's Garage selection. So there you go. Because we Dave will tell you, play the same game twice? Come on. So that says something right there, that back to back. That's impressive because, you know, we got lots of games to play. Well, we're at that point, for me at least, that I'd always like to thank you so much for listening to what we have to say about the games we've been playing. And hopefully we've inspired you to go and make some purchases and think about getting bigger shelves for your collection. Thank you so much to the content creators who take the time to talk about what they've been playing. Thank you so much, everybody. And that being said, it's cold outside, so keep your stick on the ice and take care out there, eh?